We're going to go straight into an interview with David Bradbury, as I said, joining us live on the phone from northern New South, well, all the way from northern New South Wales. How are things down there, David?
Pretty good radio democracy. Nice breeze blowing, and that's a good afternoon. Good reason to be alive.
And you're a whole 1 hour ahead of us here.
That's right, yep. I've checked my emails and ready to trot.
What's the future like?
Well, it's sort of pretty busy ever since I released the film officially a week ago in Sydney and 2 weeks ago in Melbourne. It's been pretty hot. It's an issue that the media has been sort of somewhat wary to touch because of the fact that it's such a heavy subject. Some of the journalists just don't believe that our politicians and our military defence people would in fact subject our people in a democracy to this sort of stuff to be flying around forever and a day. And other journalists have interviewed me, given it a good run. The ABC radio has been pretty good. Margaret Throsby was a bit sceptical, sight unseen, of having not seen the documentary before they interviewed me the next day. But the switchboard lit up after I was interviewed on Fran Kelly's morning breakfast program around Australia with people ringing in about the film and so on. So I think it's getting the attention it deserves. I'd like to see more attention than we got. We had a crowd of 280 people see the film at the Dendy Cinema in Newtown last Thursday night. The panel of people like Senator Bob Brown, Karina Kelly from Catalyst Program chaired the night, and the very good discussion afterwards. Paul McGove, who is the only Australian journalist to stay on in Baghdad after the invasion was announced, and he knew he'd be under the receiving threat and of those cruise missiles and bombs and so on. But Paul's done stories about depleted uranium and visited Basra Hospital in southern Iraq, which gets features in the documentary Blowing in the Wind. And he was able to give a personal account of visiting that nightmare scene. And then we also had a Muslim lawyer from Iraq who's living in Sydney who spoke, and people were very concerned about the threat to films like this and also their own personal liberties to oppose the government on the basis of the anti-terrorist laws that are being pushed through this week. So they were much focused at that screening as they were on their fears that that we're going into more and more of a closed society where people even coming together and talking about, you know, with disapproval of the secret treaty that Australia signed with the United States, which also features in the documentary, that they signed with Rumsfeld and Colin Powell, Secretary of State and Defence last year in the United States. Senator Hill went over there with Alexander Downer to sign a secret treaty which has not been publicly made known the terms and conditions of that. We just know that for the next 20 years we're going to have Americans training on Australian soil at places like Shoalwater Bay, which has to be one of the treasures still left in the planet in relatively, to this point, untouched splendour. And Lancelin in Western Australia, just north of Perth, in the Northern Territory, at the Bradshaw training ground where they rumble their tank exercises, big tank exercises back and forth across the semi-arid landscape there. And also Delamere near Catherine Air Base, the Yanks are now allowed to come and bomb and use their latest guided missiles and laser-guided missiles and smoke or smart bombs to test to try and bring it up to speed, if it's not already up to speed, as the world's mightiest military power for the next conflict. So these are issues that the film raises, and these are issues that people who've seen the film are getting concerned about because they're not aware of what we've had delivered to us by our political masters in Canberra.
Can you just give a bit of an outline for people who are unaware what depleted uranium is, what it is, and some of the things you found out in the film that are most shocking about depleted uranium?
Well, the first half of the film deals just with that. It deals with what is depleted uranium. Until I started making this film, I didn't know myself. It sounds pretty, sounds a little bit sus with the word uranium in it there, but depleted sort of puts you off your guard a bit. In fact, it's one of those misnomers that the American military establishment, defence industry are great for, like collateral damage, which is murder of innocent civilians and so on. And,
friendly fire.
Yeah, and lethal weapon. But the depleted uranium is the nuclear power or nuclear bombs. You've got U-235 and U-238 in the yellow cake. U-235 is the stuff that the nuclear scientists and power industry weapons boys want to get their hands on because it's highly fissionable. They make the plutonium out of that. U-238 is sort of like the side extraction of uranium, which they don't particularly want, and it's about 99% of the material that is processed to get the plutonium out of it. And that has been provided a huge nightmare in terms of storage and a mountain of it growing since the 70s in the United States and other countries as well. Hence the reason why they want to turn Northern Territory into a nuclear waste dump of the world and bring it back here and store it here on our soil, since we've got 40% of the yellow cake and export that each year. But so when they've got this waste product, for many years not knowing what to do, they then came up with a novel idea. The military defence contractors, they discovered that it was one of the heaviest metals on Earth and it's very dense. Therefore, they can get a bigger bang for their buck, so to speak, and it can go twice as far as conventional lead or steel bullets or bombs or missiles and so on, and pack a greater punch. And what happens when depleted uranium hits its target, be it a tank or a concrete bunker underground where the weapons of mass destruction are allegedly housed, or a car or a civilian house that they thought happened to be a weapons manufacturing plant or whatever, it slices through it and it actually sharpens. So DU sharpens as it goes through and it burns. It burns at an incredible heat. It burns at in excess of 5,000 degrees centigrade. So as it burns, it also sort of fragments into millions of small microscopic fragments. And each of those fragments are potentially radioactive, or are radioactive, because the uranium now, U-238, it combined with oxygen, and it's trying to sort of stabilize itself from a highly unstable metal vapor. And up to 70% of what hits its target ends up as a metal vapor, as a dust, a very fine dust, which then can be blown around the desert landscape of Iraq, or Afghanistan, or Kosovo, where it was used in the Balkans War, or it can be picked up and taken into the upper atmosphere and then whipped around the globe. And it can come down, it might take a couple of years even for it to come down, it might come down sooner than that, but it can be whipped easily around the globe and come down in the rain to be part of the food chain. It might be swallowed by the fish, it might be taken, breathed in directly by you in downtown Brisbane, or somewhere in Ipswich. It might be taken in the plant life, or in the water, and as it goes through its cycle of trying to stabilize itself, it's throwing off these alpha particles. And what I discovered in going to a conference on depleted uranium in Hamburg in October 2003, at a collection of some amazing scientific minds, but science minds that aren't getting a Guernsey, aren't getting any chance to put their perspective and their research to the outside world, because the nuclear club, like the fossil fuel club, is largely dominated by scientists who up until recently, at least with the fossil fuel club, who've had the pay of the oil companies and false science. But these scientists were telling me, and it was backed up with my further research on the net and going to New Scientist magazine in November 1997, you'll pick up an article there, where a scientist I didn't even interview for the film, called Dr. Eric Wright from the very reputable Harwich Medical Research Centre in Oxfordshire in England. He's discovered, as have NASA scientists, as have scientists from the University of Galveston, as have scientists from the University of Naples, they've all discovered that as little as one alpha particle and can trigger birth defects, or can cause a change in the DNA structure of a cell, which then, because it's been knocked out of kilter, is then passed down in the next generation of daughter cells and so on. So in the case of adults, this manifests itself in the form of cancers in all different organs of the body and goes through to the bone and ticks away in the bone, because you can't excrete this depleted uranium particles. It's too insoluble in that liquid. Or in the case of an unborn baby, it can be passed down in the sperm or the ova of the mother to create a deformed baby, or if the baby is in the womb, this particles are so fine they can even penetrate the otherwise normally impregnable barrier that the mother has inside her womb to protect the unborn child. So what we're seeing with babies born in Iraq, in southern Iraq and so on, is horrendous birth defects, and 8, 9, 10 babies a day are being born in Basra Hospital as a result of this depleted uranium nightmare. And where it has significance for Australia is that we've signed up to this secret treaty with the United States, and we just don't know whether they're going to be using depleted uranium weapons, whether they've used that already or not. So that's of great concern to us, because morally, as the owner of the world's greatest supply of uranium, we are sitting on a moral nightmare that we've created already in the planet. And the question is, will we treble our output of uranium by the year 2010 from 10,000 tonnes a year last year that we exported to 30,000 tonnes in the next 5 years? Or will we in fact say enough to this madness and vote to in fact make sure that this stuff stays in the ground and we don't in fact ignite a nightmare for present future generations to take care of?